studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today, the talk I am going to play was delivered by me on the 20th of May 2016, here in the Satsang Hall in Prashanthi Nilayam. The topic I chose was Satyam Vada or Speak the Truth. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After the talk, you'll be treated to some lovely bhajans from the album Bhavanjali Volume 4, produced by the Sri Satya Sai Media Division under the banner of Sai Blossom. And at 3:30 p.m., we will have the live Telugu segment Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And for now, here is today's talk. Offering my most humble and loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, respected elders, dear sisters and brothers, the topic that I have chosen for today is Satyam Vada, that is, to speak the truth. Now, most of us have the understanding that comes when we hear the word Satyam Vada. It is to speak facts as what you have perceived through your senses. Like if someone asks, so who won the IPL yesterday? You will say that Gujarat Lions won. That is because you either saw the match yesterday or you heard in the news, somebody told you, or you read the newspaper. You're basically stating facts. And it is the same thing if when you go to the court of law and when you take the oath where you say, I shall speak the truth and nothing but the truth. What you mean is that you will state the facts as it is, bluntly, without any embellishment, as you saw it or as you heard it. Now, so is speaking the truth that simple? Because if it was that simple, I can wrap up today's talk in 5 minutes just by giving an introduction and telling everyone that we all should speak the truth bluntly. We should be just as honest as possible. Just say what you saw or what you heard, and that is the end of the topic. But unfortunately, like everything in life, speaking the truth, it is not that simple. Let me begin by narrating a story, or rather a play. You know, anyone who has heard Swami's discourse where he narrates stories of his childhood, or if you have read Swami's story, you know that Swami was a very talented boy. And I'm not talking about the miracles that he performed as a child. I'm talking about the skills that he had. Like, Swami was an extraordinary singer. He was a amazing songwriter. He was a playwright. He wrote poems. He was an amazing actor. He was a dancer. And we have stories. We have stories to corroborate all this. These are not just claims that are being made. I remember once in 2003, if I'm not mistaken, in a summer course in my second year undergraduate program, one discourse Swami dedicated the whole discourse to narrating stories from his childhood. And not just stories from his childhood, it was just about the songs and poems that he wrote as a child. And they were very interesting because obviously you know that Swami was from a village. So there was a doctor, a village doctor, who had made a medicine. And he wanted Swami to promote the medicine. So Swami wrote a song promoting the medicine. It is called Bala Bhaskara, that medicine's name. And there was the lady whose husband had a mustache like Hitler. And obviously this lady was not very happy with it. So he came to Swami and told, Swami, my husband is sporting a mustache like Hitler. So please change him. Please tell him not to do it. And Swami actually wrote a song making fun of his mustache. And Swami and his friends would sing this song in the streets in front of his house. And that made him change his mind and shave this mustache off. So just to tell you that how Swami was a very talented student, so it was very natural that when Swami was a student in his high school in Urvakonda, the headmaster of the school, he told Swami, why don't you write a play and direct a play for the school's annual day celebrations? And this play was titled Cheppinattu Chestara, which means do acts follow words. Now this scene opens with a lady giving Bhagavata Parayanam. She's talking of the stories of Lord Vishnu and his incarnations, and she is also giving some insights into the stories. So this play goes on, and during the During this lady's narration of Bhagavatam, she says that we should only give charity. It is a duty of the housewife. I mean, she was talking to the village ladies. So she says it is a duty of the housewife to give charity to the needy and not to the pretenders, that who poor people who are pretending to be needy and who begs for the sake of begging. So among the crowd was also a little boy. And this boy, whose name is Krishna, is the son of this lady, and this boy was actually played by Swami himself in this play. So this boy is sitting and listening to this lady narrating this whole Bhagavatam, talking about this inner significance, etc. I mean, listening to his own mother narrate the story. And this narration is over, everybody disperses, and after everybody disperses, one beggar comes to this place and he asks for alms. Now this lady says to the beggar, "No, we don't have anything for you here. Please go away." About 5 minutes later, another very hefty mendicant walks in, and he's got a pot belly. He's got a very decorated tanpura with him, a shiny copper bowl with some grains of rice and some coins in it. He walks in and this lady calls him inside the house, you know, washes his feet, gives him money, gives him food, takes his blessings and sends him away. So the boy is sitting and watching all this. He's very surprised. So he asks his mother, "Why are you not following your own advice? Just before some time you spoke and you said that you have to give money and food to the really needy people. But that is not what I saw right now." And the mother gets very angry. He brushes this boy aside and says, "Cheppinattu chestara." That means, can we always act as we say? And this lady is again angry because how dare her son talks to her like this. So she takes him to his father. Now his father works in an office as a clerk. So she takes this boy to this office to meet his father and tells him, "See, your son is talking to me like this. He's giving me advice nowadays. So you better tell him, talk to him and give him advice. Tell him how to behave." Now this father talks to the boy. He advises him and then he goes on to talk about the importance of education. His father says, "See, you should not be wasting time and time doing all this. You should be in school studying. So how it is, even if you have difficulties, still you should overcome it and study because it is very important to get educated." And this father is giving lecture to this boy. It goes on for a while. And that is when a poor boy enters the scene. And this boy comes and tells this other boy's father that, "Sir, I don't have money to pay my fees. Today is the last day. And if I don't pay the fees today, my name will be struck off the rolls. So I have to pay the fees today itself. So please help me to pay my fees." Now the father tells him, "No," he opens his wallet, takes out his wallet, opens and shows, "See, I have no money. Unfortunately, I could have helped you, but I have no money. I'm sorry, so I can't help you," and sends the boy. Again, 5 minutes later, a group of this father's friends walk in, and they are in a very jubilant mood. They say, "See, today we have, in a few days, we have a new employee joining our office, and we want to throw him a welcome dinner. So we want some contribution." And the father is very happy hearing it. He says, "Yeah, yeah, it is very important." He opens his drawer, takes out like a bunch of cash, gives it to his colleagues and says, "Yeah, make it a very grand and gala event. Even I would like to speak that day, so give me some time to speak." And he sends his friends away. Now again, this boy Krishna, watching this, is very surprised. So he asks his father, "Just some time ago, you are telling me that how important education is, and when a boy came to you a while ago asking for money for fees, you refused. But you are throwing away so much money for a party. Why are you not acting as what you said?" And as usual, this person gets very upset that his son is talking to him like this, and he says, "Cheppinattu chestara." That means, can we always act as we say? And sends him. And he says, "No, now you know what? You're supposed to be a student. You're supposed to be in a school. Why are you here right now in my office? Go to school." And sends him to the school. So the third act shifts to the school. In the school, there is this teacher, and the teacher is in a very excited mood today because Tomorrow, there is an annual school inspection happening. So the inspector is going to come to meet, to inspect how the classes are going on, etc. And this teacher says to all the students, how many chapters are completed? And the student says, sir, 23 chapters are completed. He says, no, tomorrow when the inspector comes, you should tell him 33 chapters are completed. And then the 34th chapter is of King Harishchandra. So he tells, okay, now I am going to teach you the story of King Harishchandra. And tomorrow when the inspector comes, I will teach this story again fresh. So you already know the answers of all the questions that I will be asking you, and the inspector will be impressed. So this happens, the classes happen and the classes disperse at the end of it. And this boy Krishna is sitting in the class very perplexed, just he didn't leave the class. So the teacher is like, why, do you have some doubt? Why are you still here? And as usual, the boy asks the teacher, he says, sir, you taught us the story of Harishchandra, the legendary king who sacrificed everything for the value of truth, and you are asking us to lie tomorrow to the inspector. Why are you not following your own words? Same thing again, the teacher says, Cheppinattu Chestara. Is it possible to act as we say? And sends him away. Now the final act of this play shifts back to the boy's home. It is morning, it is time to go to school, and this boy Krishna refuses to go to school. He says, no, going to school is a waste of time. I'm not going to school. And the parents panic. They're like, what happened in the school? Like, you are not going. So they call the teacher. And this teacher comes running to home to find out what is wrong. And Krishna tells, Swami writes, if all that you teach as mother, father and teacher is only to be spoken and written and not to be put into action, what is the point of all this learning? I don't want to learn anything. So that is when the eyes of all these people, they open their eyes, they come to know their folly, and they accept and they praise this boy as their guru. And that is how the play ends. The point of telling this story, just the point I want to drive home, is that every spiritual master always gave advice as per their own actions. You know, there are many examples. Another famous story that comes to my mind right now is that of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Many of you would have heard that story. I think Swami himself has narrated this story. When one mother comes to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa with a child, and the mother complains to the master telling, my son has a bad habit of eating too much sugar, so please advise him. You know, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa gives it a little thought and says, mother, can you please come back after 2 weeks? Now, this lady is a bit upset because she has traveled a long distance to come to the master. But she says, okay, maybe when the master says something, we have to accept. She says, okay, maybe he has something, some big plan he has for me. So, yeah, I will come back after 2 weeks. Now, after 2 weeks, mother comes back to Ramakrishna again with the son. And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa very lovingly takes the boy onto his lap and tells him, see, eating sugar is not good for health. It can cause a lot of problems in the future. And so you should stop eating sugar. Anything in excess is very bad for you. And the Ramakrishna tells the mother, see, I have advised your son, so mostly he will stop eating now. Now this mother gets very upset. He says, that's all? I mean, I was expecting something much more than this. For this, why did you ask me to come after 2 weeks? You should have told this to my son even much earlier. And then Ramakrishna says, see, the problem is, 2 weeks ago, even I was eating sugar. So when I was eating sugar, how can I advise your son not to eat sugar? So I wanted some time to stop eating sugar so I can advise your son not to do it. And it is the same with our beloved Swami. I don't know how many, it's a very similar story. I don't know if you have heard about this story. In the early days, Swami used to eat pan. You know, if you see the earlier photo of Swami, you can see Swami's lips bright red in color because of eating pan. One day in the interview room, there were a group of people, and there was this person who used to have the bad habit of taking snuff. Snuff is like a powdered tobacco which they used to inhale through their nose. And because of which his handkerchief was stained black. Because after inhaling the snuff, he would use the handkerchief to wipe it. So during the interview, he took out his handkerchief and Swami noticed that it was all stained black. So Swami chided this person, telling, see, you have a very bad habit. You should not take tobacco like that. And look at your handkerchief. It is all stained black. You know, what kind of impression are you giving? And that's when Swami noticed that his own handkerchief had some stains of red color because of the pan. And that very day, Swami stopped eating pan. Swami has never asked us to do anything that he has not done himself. You know, when Swami says, my life is his message, it is literally true. Anything that he has given as his message, anything that he has spoken, is only based on his actions. You know, when Swami says, simple living, high thinking, it is because he led such a simple life. Probably the devotees who came much after Mahasamadhi may not be able to appreciate it so much because they see so much grandeur everywhere. They see the Yajur Mandir, which is so big. They see Sai Kulwant Hall with all the gold plating. What they don't understand is Yajur Mandir came into being only during the final 5 to 6 years of Swami's life, physical life. Till then, before that, he lived in the Purnachandra auditorium, in a room in the auditorium. He didn't even have a separate building for himself. Before that, he lived in the Prashanti Mandir. In the Prashanti Mandir, Swami's room would be just above the interview room. And it is such a small room. You know, in 2005, I was in my second year postgraduate program, and we had this great opportunity. We were called to clean Swami's room. That is not the room where Swami was living then, the room above the Bhajan Mandir there. And we were all so shocked to see Swami's room. It was so small. And it was like made up of the granite rock. So inside, it looks exactly like a jail. It's a small room made of all rocks with a very small window, a cot, a table and a chair. There was nothing else in that room. And we confirmed it with some of the teachers who were there. And, you know, there was a student who used to stay with Swami during the 80s. And he was narrating that when Swami would get up in the morning, he could not even put on the light in the room, because once he puts on the light through the window, everyone can see that the light is on, so Swami is awake. So everyone would come and crowd near the wall, looking at Swami's room, waiting for Swami to show up somewhere. So Swami would not even put on his light. He would use a torch light to brush his teeth, to shave and things like that. You know, that is how he lived. When Swami says, love all, serve all, they're not just statements. That is because he lived that message. You know, once when Swami asked a student, like he had just finished his MBA program, and Swami asked the student, so what do you want to do next? And this student said, Swami, I want to stay here and serve you. And Swami said, serve me? Why will you serve me? I don't need any servants. I am the servant of everybody. And this boy was taken aback. You know, I mean, it is very blasphemous to think God as your servant. Swami, he said, no, Swami, how can you say that? We are all your servants. You are the only master here. And this argument went on for a while. Swami would say, no, 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 I am your servant. He would say, no, Swami, you are the master. We are your servant. And as usual, Swami would have the final word. And this boy was so taken aback by what Swami said. Swami said, see, I do everything you ask me to do. You tell Swami, please do this for me. Please help me here. Please do that. Please do this. I do everything. Have you ever done one thing I have asked you to do? So now you tell me who is whose servant. You know, such a profound statement. And this boy was taken aback and he was in tears that day. And even during, now it is not just in spirit, but even if you see in action. Now we know the students do the Gram Seva. Every Dasara festival time, the boys go to villages and do Seva. They distribute food and they distribute clothes to the villages. Now before the Gram Seva started, there used to be Narayan Seva. During the birthday celebrations, all the people from the village used to come to the ground and Swami would personally go and serve everybody. You know, I had this opportunity. As students, we all got the opportunity to serve the devotees, prasadam, that is after the Akhand Bhajan, morning prasadam, and after Shivratri bhajans. I know how difficult it is to carry this, because here the devotees, they sit on the floor. So you have to be constantly bending. It is not standing and serving. You are all the time bending, and you have a heavy rice vessel in your hands. You walk 10 steps and your whole back cramps. You cannot take, after that you just can't move, your whole body cramps and you have to stretch slowly, take a break, again continue. And here is Swami in Hillview Stadium, going around serving each and everybody. He would be sweating profusely. There is no shade. Those days there would be no shade. They would not put up any tent or anything. In the sun, he would go around serving everybody, talking to them, telling them that they should take more food, they should collect their clothes. So when, you know, when we say, Swami, you are the King of Kings, you are the Raja and all that, Swami was not a king who sat on the throne and gave orders. He was a king who was there in the field. He led by his own actions. He led by example, his own example. Now, even if somebody says, okay, you know what, you're saying Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara, that is an Indian quote. I have never heard of Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara, but everybody appreciates the value of honesty. You know, in school we are taught about cleanliness and honesty is the best policy. We are told that we should speak the truth. Now, earlier when I started my talk, I was talking about how sometimes people think that being honest means to speak the facts bluntly. They think, you know, some people, they say that, you know, I'm a very honest man. I don't mince my words. I call a spade a spade. If you're walking on the road and if there is an overweight person, can you go and tell them, sir, you're looking so fat? Is that the kind of honesty Swami is expecting of us? And that person is being honest. Technically, if you see, he's stating a fact and he's being honest. But is that the kind of honesty that Swami is expecting of us? Now, the Vedas are very clear on that. They don't just say, speak the truth. They say, Satyam Bruyat, Priyam Bruyat, Na Bruyat Satyam Apriyam. That is, speak the truth, but speak the truth in a very pleasing manner, in a pleasant way, and do not speak Na Bruyat Satyam Apriyam. Do not speak the unpleasant truth. You know, Swami, now, it is one thing to speak the truth. Now, the Vedas also say that Priyam cha nan ritam bruyat isha dharma sanatanaha. That is, even though a lie is pleasing, just because you can say a lie which is very pleasing, do not utter a lie. So how to avoid uttering a lie? Swami narrates this beautiful story. During the Mahabharata war, one day Ashwatthama takes a vow. He says that I am going to behead the Pandavas today. And, you know, during those days, a vow is not something that is to be taken lightly. Today, everybody, people will say something and just forget about it. But during those days, if you take a vow, people will defend their word till death. So obviously, this spread a lot of panic among the Pandavas. And Draupadi was very worried. Because even if Ashwatthama is not able to kill the Pandavas physically, I'm sure he will be able to do a lot of damage because he is a strong warrior. So she goes to Lord Krishna and she says, Krishna, here there's a problem. Ashwatthama has taken a vow to kill the Pandavas. So now Krishna thinks over and says, okay, you know what? I have a plan. And Krishna takes the Pandavas to sage Durvasa. Now Durvasa is obviously very happy to see Lord Krishna. He welcomes Lord Krishna. He says, Lord, I'm very so glad that you have come to my small ashram. So what can I do for you? So Lord Krishna explains the problem to Durvasa. He says, see, this is the problem. The Ashwatthama has taken a vow. So I want you to give shelter to the Pandavas in your ashram. Now Durvasa says, I am very happy to give shelter to the Pandavas, but there is one problem. And the problem is, I will not utter a lie. So if Ashwatthama comes here and asks me, are the Pandavas here? I will have to say yes. So your whole plan is going to flop. So Krishna thinks again for a while and says, okay, you know, I have a plan for that also. You see, I am the embodiment of truth. So why will I ever ask you to lie? I will never ask you to lie. You don't have to lie. You speak the truth. But you speak the truth in a little angry voice. Lord Krishna tells Durvasa. So Durvasa agrees. So the plan is, they dig a pit in Durvasa's ashram and puts all the Pandavas. The Pandavas hide in the pit. They cover the pit with planks and Durvasa sits on that plank and he goes on doing his own daily prayers. Now Ashwatthama comes to sage Durvasa's ashram And you know, Sage Durvasa is very known, well known for his anger. So everybody is very careful while dealing with Durvasa because nobody wants to get cursed. So he comes and he says, Sage or Venerable Sage, have you seen the Pandavas? I am looking for them. And Durvasa says in a very angry tone, yes, they are under my feet. So Ashwathama thinks, no, there is no way Pandavas can be under his feet because under his feet is the soil. So he must be like angry. He's just telling me something. So let us just go away. So Sage Durvasa, without telling a lie, he could save the Pandava's life. So that is the key here. When you are speaking the truth, or when you have given a choice between a lie and a truth, you have to use your intelligence. We have to discriminate and then speak the truth. It is not just about speaking the truth in a blunt way. The Buddhist philosophy calls it upaya. Now, upaya means skillful means. That means we should act, any act you do, you should do it with wisdom and compassion. Also, it should be appropriate to the time and space. You know, in the Indian culture and heritage, we call about desha, we talk about desha kala paristhiti. That is, we have a place, we have a time, and we have circumstance. So, considering all the three, we have to act or speak. In Buddhism, there is a Lord Buddha talks about a parable. It is called the parable of a burning house. So the parable is that there is a house in which there are some children playing and there is this man of the house and the house is on fire. Now, if the father says, there is fire, everybody come, the children are going to get panic. Once the children panic, you have no control over the kids. There are so many kids, they can be running here, they can run into the flame can fall over them. So the father keeps calm and he tells the kid, okay kids, everybody come out, come out. But the kid doesn't want to come out because they are too small to understand the significance of the flame. At the same time, they are lost in their game. They want to play. They don't want to go out of the house. So what do the father do? He tells them, see, I have got some beautiful toys for you outside, much better than what you have. Why don't you come and play with them? Now the children are very happy listening to this, so they come running out and they are saved just in time from the burning house. Now the children comes out of the house, but there are no toys to play. So Lord Buddha asks his disciple, so what do you think? Do you think the father is guilty for lying because he lied to the kids? And this disciple says, Lord, I don't think the father is guilty of lying if he buys some toys and gives them now, because he just acted to save the kids. Now he can go and buy some toys and give them. So the kids are happy and the father, they are also saved. No, this man is not guilty of a lie even if he doesn't buy the kids anything, because he did what he could do to save his own children. So now we know that there are so many gray areas when it comes to lying and speaking the truth. So here is another story. Now, there was this thief. Okay, so he was looking for some things to steal as usual. But that day he was not able to find. He was always looking for some rich people from whom he can steal something. So he keeps walking around and then he reaches near a temple. And in the temple, there is this priest who is giving a lecture. So he says, okay, there seems to be so many people in the temple. Let me go and see what is going on there. So this thief goes to the temple. And then he sees a lot of people. He was trying to see from whom he could steal. But he finds that there are no rich people there. So he was like disappointed. He said, okay, I don't think there is any work for me today. So let me just hear and listen to what this priest is talking. And the priest on that day, he was talking about the virtue of honesty. So that the priest was listening and the thief was listening. And the priest was making a very logical argument. And the thief was very impressed listening to this priest. He says, yeah, it sounds very good. I think I should all be very honest. But then suddenly he realizes that he's a thief. How can I be honest? So after the talk is over, he's just sitting there lost in his thought. What can I do? And the priest comes and he says, so what happened? Why are you still sitting here? And he says, sir, like this, I heard your talk. I was very impressed with what you said. I want to be also very honest. But you see, in the business that I am in, I find it very difficult to be honest. And then the priest, not knowing he's a thief, lectures him, no, it is possible. You have to be honest. If you do honest business, you will get more money and things like that. And the thief, being a village person, very naive, he thinks, I think what he's telling is true. I should, my business of stealing may also improve if I speak the truth. So he decides, from now on, I will speak the truth. So the next day, this thief goes to the capital city and he's just roaming around to see what he can do, where he can steal. And then he sees another man coming across him. And this man asks him, so, hello, what is your name? What is your profession? Now he has taken a vow that he should speak the truth. He says, my name is so and so and I am a thief. And this other person says, oh, guess what? I am also a thief. And they're very happy. Oh, two thieves have met. They go for a drink. They have fun. And they say, you know what? Why don't we steal together then? We have become good friends now. So together we can steal. So this other person says, you know what? Instead of stealing from all these petty people, why don't we go to the king's court? Let's steal from there. So both of them, they go to the king's court. It's at night. And somehow when they were near the gate, the guard sees them. And the guard is like, who are you? Why are you here at this late hour? And this thief, now he has to speak the truth. He says, I'm a thief. We both are thieves. We have come to steal your treasury. Now the guard thinks, this person cannot be a thief, because if he is a thief, he will never tell me that he is a thief. Maybe he is some big shot. Maybe he is a minister's family or something. So he has that arrogance. With a lot of arrogance, he is telling like this. So I'll just let him pass. So the guard let these two people pass, and they enter the king's treasury. They open the treasury and they find five valuable diamonds. Now, because they're very honest, you know, honest thieves, he says, you know what, there are five diamonds. Let's take only four, because then we can split, because you can't break a diamond. So let's split it equally. You take two, I take two. We will leave one left. We have no problem. So they take the four diamonds and they walk out through the main gate, because now the palace guard thinks that they are some VIPs or something. And next day morning, the treasurer comes to the treasury and finds it broken. So he immediately runs to the king's court and says, O king, the treasury has been broken into. Now the king sends the minister. He says, okay, go take a stock of what is lost and what is there. The minister goes to the treasury. He sees one diamond left in the case. He thinks, now the king doesn't know what is there and what is not there. So I can take off this diamond and tell the king that all the five diamonds were stolen. So he goes and takes off one diamond and he goes back and tells the king that, O king, some thief has come and he has taken away all your diamonds. Now the twist is that the other thief was actually the king. He was in disguise. He was just walking around the palace grounds and he meets this interesting person who says that he is the thief. The king becomes very intrigued. Let's see, okay, let me check out this person. Now the king knows his address, his name. So the king tells his guards, okay, there is this person in this house. Go get him. So now the thief comes shivering to the king's in front of the king. He doesn't know how he got caught. And the king asks the thief, so tell me what happened. What did you steal yesterday? And the thief very truthfully narrates the whole incident. He tells, sir, I found a partner. We both of us came here. We found five diamonds. We only took four because we wanted to share equally among us and we left one. So immediately the king tells his guards to search the minister. And when they search us, they find the other diamond. And the king is very impressed with this person's honesty. And he says, okay, you know what? You're a very honest person. So I'm going to sack this minister. So why don't you become my new minister? So here is a moral. You speak the truth, good things will happen to you. You speak the truth and then from a thief, you can become a minister. But is it that simple? Now here is another story from the Panchatantra. Now here in this story, there is a potter. His name is Yudhishthira, okay? And he had a habit of drinking liquor. So one day he drank a lot of liquor and he was walking and suddenly he stumbled upon one of his pottery and he fell. And he fell face down and one of the broken pots hurts him. So he gets a big wound on his forehead, okay? So now what happens that it heals but it leaves a huge scar. So, and there is a famine in the village. So he leaves his village and goes to the countryside, to the country. And there the king is recruiting people for his army and his staff. And there the king notices this person. He sees a huge scar. And the king is very impressed. The king sees, okay, he has got such a huge scar. Possibly he must have fought some big battles in his life. So I think he'll be a good choice to be my guard. So the king calls him and says, you know, why don't we join in my army as a general or something. So tell me about the battles that you have fought. And this person says, king, I have not fought any battles in my life. I was just a potter. Once I fell down and I got this. So the king is very disappointed and says, okay, just throw this person away. Now, here it is another person who spoke the truth and he didn't get a job. So what is it contradictory? Does it mean that if you speak the truth, good happen to you? Sometimes if you speak truth, bad happens to you? The thing is, superficially, even if a lie can help you win good things. Like for example, in the first story, by speaking the truth, the thief became a minister. The second story, by speaking the truth, he did not get his job. So superficially, it might look like speaking the truth had that bad effect on him, but now imagine what would have happened if that person told a lie and said, yes, king, I fought a lot of battles. I'm a very great warrior. And the king hires him. Either he dies in the first battle he fights because he has no clue how to fight, or he embarrasses himself when he goes to his battle training because he has no clue even how to use a sword. The point here is, once you start to lie, it is a very slippery slope. You have to build lie on top of another lie to save your first lie. Then you have to lie again to save your second lie. And you build your whole life on these lies. And one day it is bound to collapse. You know, history has taught us that any kingdom, anything that is built on lies is bound to collapse. Swami says in one of his discourses, I'm quoting him, Swami says, truth is one's real nature. When we speak the truth, there is always a great joy welling inside us. When you lie, you're deceiving yourself and your mind get darkened by fear and shame. People take to the path of falsehood because of the rajasic passions of lust, greed, hate and pride. While values like contentment, humility, detachment, these keep you on the path of truth. So if you build your life based on the rajasic passions like lust, greed, hate and pride, you are on the path of untruth. What happens? Again, Swami tells the story of a street hawker. So he is walking on the road with a head full of empty bottles. As he is walking on the road, he thinks, if I sell these bottles at this rate, I will get so much money. Now, taking the profit aside, I can buy these things. Now, I sell this at this rate, I get more money. And in his mind, he is building up this dream. Okay, he's saying, I will do this, I will do that, then I will buy this. And then finally, I have a beautiful home. I will get married, I will have children. Then he dreams about having grandchildren. And suddenly, he's walking and dreaming with all this. And suddenly, among his grandchildren, he sees a child of his servant playing with them. And he gets very upset. And dreaming, he takes this child and pushes him away. And in that process, what happens that the bottles that he is carrying, he throws them away. So suddenly he realizes that the batch of empty bottles he had are all broken. And he's now back to square one. He has nothing to start earning his money. Here Swami says that believing his fantasy to be a reality, that he finally realized that the basket of bottles, it had fallen, and the 10 rupees that he had, he could have made from those bottles, is lost. So every dream that is based on this greed or on lust or on hate or on pride will collapse this way. You know, earlier when I started, I was talking how every spiritual master, they speak only based on their actions. And they speak the truth. Obviously, they speak the truth. Now, what is the truth? And where do we find the truth? It says, Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara. Speak the truth is the meaning of Satyam Vada. When you remove that superfluous meaning of the truth as being honesty, when you look at it at a deeper level, what is the truth and where do we find this truth? You know, there is a story of a man who lived his life. Throughout his life, he lived by begging. So every day he would stand on one spot and he would beg to earn his living. So it continued for day after day, week after week, month after month. He continued begging. And one fine day he passed away in that very same spot. So all the people thought, you know, the man spent his whole life in that area. So why not bury him there itself? So they started digging. And when they started digging, they hit something like hard where he was standing. And when they removed that, they found a box of treasure hidden right where he was standing. And this story is like a symbolic representation of our predicament. That's what we are in search of, the truth, not knowing that truth is right inside us. And this is the time to start digging inside to find the truth. About 10-20 years ago, there was this student. He was going through some books in the university library, and he came across a very interesting book that was written by a physics Nobel laureate. And he thought, okay, let me go through this book and see what is in the content, because he was a physics student. And then in one of the pages, there was a debate between an atheist and a theist. So they were debating on the existence of God. Now, this boy, he knew very well that matters of God and spirit and spirituality cannot be found in the realms of the mind or the intellect. You have to go beyond them. But he was very interested, and he was a science student. He was used to logical thinking. Because of that, he was very impressed by the arguments that was put forward by the atheist. He found them to be very logical. He found, yeah, it sounds very logical. And suddenly he realized, oh my God, what am I doing? He felt very disturbed. He felt very disturbed mentally, and he said, why am I reading all this nonsense and unnecessarily disturbing my mind? So he walked towards the Sathya Sai Speak section of the library, and he prayed to Swami. He said, Swami, please guide me. You have to tell me something nice, because I am feeling very disturbed reading all these unwanted debates. He opens the book, and the first line that struck him, Swami is telling, why are you wasting your time listening to the debates between atheists and theists? Okay? And in that discourse, Swami goes on to say, debates like this are like two people standing on the ground and arguing whether the plane that is flying above has a pilot or not. Because there are only two ways of finding out. One is either you go up and see if there is a pilot, or second, you stay down and you wait for the plane to land. And this is the time when the plane has landed. The avatar came, and we had the good fortune of meeting the pilot. We had the good fortune of talking to him. We know that there is a pilot. But how do we know if the credentials of the pilot is true? You know, anybody can come and say, I'm a pilot. How do you know he's really the pilot? The real proof is when you see him in the cockpit. And that is the cockpit of our heart. Unless you see that truth within yourself, inside your heart, you can never be sure of the truth. So you have to go within and find that truth within. And that is when you realize that the truth that we were searching all along our life, or we were trying to deny all along our life, is within yourself. So let me narrate a beautiful story at this juncture. This is a real life story that happened to another student of Swami. This happened in the 80s. So there was this student who was well adept in catching snakes. Okay, he had that knack of catching snakes before, from the village where the place where he came from, he already had the talent for doing that. You know, Puttaparthi is full of snakes. So whether you are in the hostel or in the college, you invariably run into a snake or sometime or the other. And since this boy knew how to catch the snake, whenever they found a snake, instead of letting the village people kill the snake, the students would inform this boy, telling, why don't you come and catch the snake and leave it somewhere, you know, to prevent the villagers from killing the snake. And he would do that. And he became very popular among all the students and even in the village, because he was like the snake catcher. And slowly, little bit, it started getting into him. Like, oh, now I'm like a big snake catcher. Anytime there is a problem with snake, you call me like that. This boy, he finished his course and everything. And then by Swami's grace, he became a teacher in the university. And one afternoon, he did not have any classes. This is in the 80s. And he thought, okay, I don't have any classes now, and I have to go for darshan in another one and a half, 2 hours. So why don't I take a nap for a while, rest, and then take a bath and go for darshan. So he was taking a nap in the hostel, and suddenly one boy comes running to him and says, sir, there is a snake in the college. You have to come immediately. And he says, see, college is little far. By the time I walk and come till there, because the snake is not going to stay in one place, it'll just go away. So I don't think there is a point of me coming. He says, no, no, sir, it is cornered. You have to come, and because there are, the villagers are waiting, they will come and kill it otherwise. So he feels, okay, I think I should go catch the snake. So he gets up half in that half sleep, this thing. You know, he doesn't even realize what he was wearing. He just wears, because generally he used to wear shoes. That day he just wore chappals. He just wore chappals and he walks to the college to find the snake. And when he goes there, he finds a lot of students and some of the college non-teaching staff and are gathered there waiting for him to come. And they tell him, sir, there's a snake here, so please do something about it. So he comes, and then some of the students ask him, sir, this is a great opportunity. Can you please show us how do you catch the snake? So he gets into that tutor mode now. He says, okay, I'll show you. He gets a stick and he says, see, the first thing is you should hold the head of the snake down, because then the snake can't do anything. Then slowly you catch it by the head and then you take it and you can throw it. And then he takes the snake up like that. And then some of the students say, sir, can we take a photo with you with the snake? And then he's like, okay, come on, let's take a photo. And then, you know, he catches the snake. Everybody's taking photo and all that is going on. And then he says, okay, it is time. I have to go and let the snake go now. So he takes the snake. He walks with it till to go to Hanuman Top, the Hanuman Hill there. That time the Hanuman statue was not yet built, but the Krishna statue was there. So he would leave it behind the Hanuman statue there, that area, so the snake can go away. So he's taking the snake, walking up to the Krishna statue, goes to the Hanuman. And that is when another group of students come running, because they had missed the whole show and they wanted him to reenact it, because they also wanted to see, because they don't know when they will get another snake. So, sir, again, they are like, sir, please show us. We have not seen how you catch the snake. And then in his foolishness, he says, yeah, I think I'll show it to you. And then he leaves the snake on the floor. In the college, he had a stick. Here, there is no stick. He couldn't find a stick. So he feels, okay, you know what? I'll just use my feet. So the snake is there. He uses his feet with the chappal to keep his feet on the snake's head, holding it down. And he's trying to show them, now how do you catch it by the neck? And then suddenly, in the college, it is concrete floor. So the snake cannot escape. But in the ground, it is mud. So even though he held it down, the snake had somehow slithered out from under his feet. And in a second, it was right in front of him. And it gave a nasty bite on his feet. And suddenly he shouted, and then thankfully the boys were standing a little far and they were like, sir, what happened? He's like, no, nothing. I think the snake didn't bite me or anything. I got a little scared. You all go away. He sent the boys away and the snake just ran away. And to the horror of horror, he realized he was actually now bitten by a snake, a cobra. And he was not sure what to do. There were two other students and two other teachers there with him. They were like, are you okay? What is wrong with you? And he says, I think I've been bitten by a snake. But he says, you know, I think it'll be fine. Just take me to the hostel. I will use a blade to drain the blood and I will tie a cloth. And because he didn't want to admit that something dangerous had happened, he was trying to negate it, telling, no, nothing has happened. And they were walking down and suddenly the pain hit him. It was unbearably painful. He couldn't walk. And that is when the horror hit him that, no, this is dangerous. I cannot go to the hostel. I have to go to the hospital. And the nearest hospital is Swami's General Hospital. And he goes to the hospital, and as he's nearing, he realizes the doctor there was Dr. Alreja, who was Swami's personal physician then. And he thinks, now if I tell Dr. Alreja that I did all this and a snake bit me, Dr. Alreja will surely go and tell Swami. And he realizes there is a chance that Swami might expel me from the college for my indiscipline, because he went and did all the stunts. So he meets Dr. Alreja. Dr. Alreja asks him, so what happened? And he says, sir, he thought, okay, I'll tell a lie here. He tells, sir, I was doing social service and a snake bit me. I was cleaning up something. And Dr. Alreja immediately takes his pulse and feels, okay, it is, something is not right. Immediately admits him in the hospital and tells him, okay, tells the nurses, get the antidote for the poison, venom, snake venom. And for their horror, they realize, I mean, that time the general hospital was much smaller than that. There were just very few doctors. And it was darshan time. It was already darshan time, 4 o'clock. And the all the medicines would be stored in an almira. And the person who had the keys of the almira had gone for darshan. So there was no way of opening that almira now. And now this boy is like, now he has gone for darshan and Swami is Swami will come out any time now. And when Swami is during, darshan is going on, nobody can disturb, nobody can walk in and call somebody out, especially those days. Swami was very strict. So this boy feels, okay, there is no way I will get the antidote in time. Now Swami will out for darshan. Nobody will dare to disturb that person for the keys. I think I should prepare myself for a certain death. And he's lying in the hospital bed because he used to practice a lot of yoga and meditation and all that. So he has heard a lot of stories as to how the soul lives through the Sahasrara chakra and how you go through a, you know, tunnel of light and all that. So he's planning himself, okay. He's, even though he had excruciating pain, he was thinking, okay, I should get my mind ready. I should think only of God when I am dying. All that thoughts are going on in his head. And suddenly his doctor walks in with his friend comes in and says, okay, the antidote has come. And he's like, really, so fast? How did you get the antidote? I thought he was in the mandir. He says, what do you mean so fast? Look at the clock. And when he looks at the clock, he realizes that 45 minutes had passed. And he was still alive. Nothing wrong had happened to him. And to this boy, lying in the bed, it appeared like 5 minutes. Now, when you are in excruciating pain, even 1 minute will appear like 1 hour to you. But this was exactly the opposite. 45 minutes appeared to him like 5 minutes. And the antidote was bought. He was given the antidote and he survived. Nothing happened to him. And the next day, Dr. Alreja comes to him and says, hey boy, why did you lie to me? And he's like, how did the doctor come to know? He's like, sir, what lie are you talking about? He says, Swami told me that you were not bitten by a snake, you got picked by a thorn. Okay. And he's like, sir, what happened? How did Swami come to know of this? He says, yesterday when you were admitted here, I immediately called up Sri Chiranjeevi Rao, who was the ashram caretaker then. I told him, sir, this student has, please tell Swami immediately that this student has been bitten by a snake because it's very dangerous. So darshan is going on and Chiranjeevi Rao, sir, he stepped up and he told Swami, a boy has been bitten, but he's in the general hospital. And Swami, very not even serious, very casually, he said, hey, that is not a snake. He got pricked by a thorn. Why are you disturbing me during darshan? And he just walked away. And Chiranjeevi Rao was very upset because this doctor called him and told him a lie that he was being bitten by a snake. So Chiranjeevi Rao, in fact, calls back the doctor and says, why did you tell a lie like this? Swami told he was picked by a thorn and not bitten by a snake. So Dr. Alreja was very perplexed. Aray, this boy told me probably he lied. Now he didn't tell anything then. He just left it. He said, okay, fine. The story now doesn't end here. He became fine. He had that scar on his feet for many years to come. He still has it. After 2 years, this boy, there is some drama, convocation drama or something like that happening. And he was in the organizing group as a teacher. And Swami called him for an interview. After the interview, when he went to take Padnamaskar, Swami suddenly asks him, hey, what is the scar on your feet? You seem to be having a huge scar on your, it was on his toe, it was visible. And suddenly he freezes because he's like, oh my God. Now I can't lie to Swami, so I have to tell the whole truth. I have to tell that Swami, I tried catching the snake and the snake bit me and then all that story. And then that time Swami had told it was a thorn. So he just tells Swami, I was bitten by a snake. Swami, snake? Really? That is a snake? That doesn't look like a snake bite. That was a thorn, no? Like that Swami asks. Then he says, Swami, it was a snake. Swami says, okay. Then he takes Padnamaskar and then as he was leaving, Swami calls him again. Swami says, hey. He turns back. Swami said, from this mouth, I will never say it was a snake. It was a thorn, it was a thorn, it was a thorn. And then that is when it hits this boy that if Swami had said it was a snake, it would have been a snake bite and immediately within 45 minutes, there was no time to get the antidote, this boy would probably, he would have died. But at that very moment, Swami, there was no time to create vibhuti and send him to the hospital. At that very moment, Swami just brushed it aside and said, no, it is a thorn. And that whole snake bite got reduced, a thorn prick. So when you are residing in that truth, you don't have to speak the truth. Whatever you speak, it becomes the truth. Whatever you speak happens. You know, there is nothing like, you don't have to think, oh, is this the truth? Is this a thorn? So do I have to really say it is a thorn? It is not like that. Once you reside in that real truth that is within yourself. You know, we all pray the prayer Asatoma Sadgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, meaning lead us from untruth to truth. Every great spiritual master has his own or her own way of leading his followers or disciples from untruth to truth. For some people, it is like from the story of Ashtavakra and Janaka. Janaka gets self-realization in an instant. The moment he tries to put his feet on the horse, at that moment he gets self-realization. For some people, it happens in stages, you know. For example, when you teach a child about science, for example, you're telling about sunset and sunrise. We know that the sun, it is not the sun that is moving around the earth, but the earth that is moving around the sun. But when you teach a child, you teach as though the sun sets in the west and sun rises in the east. But as he progresses, then you say, no, what you learned was not true. This is the new truth. The new truth is that the sun stays in one place, but the earth rotates on its own axis, because of which you get the illusion of having a sunrise and a sunset. Or like, for example, in science, if anybody has got a science background, we have the model of the atom. If you ask anyone to draw the atom, everyone would draw with a nucleus in the center and electrons as revolving around the nucleus, like a solar system. That is what you're taught in smaller classes. But as you graduate, you're told that that is not the model of the atom. In quantum physics or quantum chemistry, it is a Schrodinger model, which is, you cannot say that electron is in one place. There is no defined place. It's a very abstract model for the atom. So now the question arises, in science, why do you have to teach something that is not true? And again tell, you know what, that was not true, but this is the truth. There was a study done in University of Colorado, where they was trying to see, with this example of Bohr's model and Schrodinger's model of atom, to see if you are teaching the children directly the Schrodinger's model without talking about the false model, how easy will the students be able to grasp. And the study, it was a very overwhelming conclusion that you have to teach the Bohr's model first and only then the Schrodinger's model. So sometimes you have to learn something that is not true. Like, for example, if you take the path of devotion, if you take the ultimate truth, that is Advaita, there is only one. From that perspective, devotion is a lie, because there is duality, it is not true. Then why is Swami talking about devotion? Why is Swami talking of Meera and Radha? Because that is a stepping stone to get to the ultimate truth. I will just conclude with another beautiful story that telling us about this, how Swami in his beautiful way guided a student in this going to the truth in a step-by-step manner. So this student who had this great fortune of being in Swami's room in the 80s, he had the good fortune of staying with Swami in Swami's residence. And he had the duty of, you know, Swami would get a lot of letters. And some devotees would place some notes or checks in some of the letters. So before they tore away the letters, he had to open the letter and check if there was a note or a check, keep them aside, and tear the rest of the letters. So he was doing that, and one of the letter was a very beautiful card that was made by a devotee. So he felt this devotee has put so much effort in making this beautiful card, and he didn't have the heart of throwing it away. So he just kept it aside. He said, maybe I'll show it to Swami. If Swami likes it, Swami can keep it somewhere. And then after a while, Swami walked in. And then Swami asked him, why have you kept that aside? And he said, Swami, this is a very beautiful card that was made by a devotee. So I didn't have the heart of throwing it away. So Swami took the card. He saw it. And he threw it back at the boy and told, okay, you keep it. Now this boy is very delighted. When he opened the card, it had a prayer. Now, it was the famous prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi, which goes like, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. It goes on like this. So it starts by saying, make me an instrument of thy peace. So he was very impressed with this prayer. He said, yeah, I think this is a very beautiful prayer. You should use it for Swami. One day there was a function in Kulwant Hall, there was no Kulwant Hall those days. And Swami asked this boy to speak. And he felt, okay, I think Swami himself gave this to me, so I should narrate this in my speech. So he narrated this, at the end of his speech, he narrated this prayer. Swami said, yeah, very nice prayer at the end of his speech. And then, after he went inside, the function was over, Swami went to the interview room, this boy was sitting. After Swami came out, he said, but what is this like, make me an instrument of thy thesis, make me tea, make me coffee. Who are you to tell me, make me like this, you know? And this boy was surprised, Swami, I mean, that is the prayer. It is not like I am telling you to do anything. And Swami said, it should be, may I be an instrument of peace, you know? And this boy was very happy listening to that. He said, yeah, that is true. Instead of telling God, make me, when you say, may I be, it is like you are letting it happen. May I be an instrument of peace. So he was very impressed. So after 3 years, in Kodaikanal, Swami was asking this boy to speak every day. It went on for some 30 days and this boy was running out of material to speak. So he said, okay, this prayer I had done 3 years ago, so let me use it again now. And so he said, okay, I can also tell about the twist that Swami gave. And he narrates the whole story again and he concludes with, may I be an instrument of peace. And now Swami's, after the speech was over, Swami calls him. Swami's like, what is this, like a beggar you are, may I, you know, what is this you are telling? You should be, Lord, I am an instrument of thy peace. That should be what you're saying. So beautifully, Swami guided him from make me an instrument of thy peace to may I be an instrument of thy peace to I am an instrument of thy peace. And when we have that conviction, then that is when the truth that is inside us is shining forth with all its resplendence. And with that, I conclude my today's talk. Thank you for your patient listening. Jai Sai Ram.
Shiv Gauri Nandan జనమోహన మాధవ సాయి ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర
సాయి గురుదేవా భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
ఈశ్వరంబనందన సాయి జనార్దన
ఈశ్వరంబనందన
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర
సాయి గురుదేవా సాయి గురుదేవా
సాయి గురుదేవా
సాయి గురుదేవా మంగళదాయక సాయి గురుదేవా
ముని జన మోహన మాధవ సాయి
ముని జన మోహన మాధవ సాయి
ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
ప్రశాంతి నిలయా దేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
భరతి పురీశ్వర సాయి గురుదేవా
ఈశ్వరంబనందన సాయి జనార్దన
భరతి విహారా సాయి హమారా
భరతి విహారా సాయి హమారా
భరతి విహారా సాయి హమారా
భరతి విహారా సాయి హమారా
అపనా బనా లో సాయి రామ్
అపనా బనా సాయి రామ్
అపనా బనా లో సాయి రామ్
అపనా బనా సాయి రామ్
సాయి రామ్ సాయి సాయి రామ్ సాయి
రామ్
మాతా నాస్తి పితా నాస్తి నాస్తి బంధు సఖా be पिता नास्ति नास्ति बंधु सखा बनालो साई राम
अपना बनालो साई राम
अपना बनालो साई राम
अपना बनालो साई राम
साई राम साई राम
साई राम साई राम
परति बिहारा साई हमारा
परति बिहारा साई हमारा
अपना बना लो साई राम साई राम साई राम
साई राम साई राम
माता नास्ति पिता नास्ति नास्ति बंधु सखा अपना बना लो साई राम साई राम साई
राम
साई राम परति विहारा साई हमारा वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
अवधपुरी में जय सियाराम अवधपुरी में जय सियाराम
अवधपुरी में जय सियाराम
विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर
विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर
विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर परतीपुरी में साई राम परतीपुरी में
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नर हरि
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 नारायणा साईं नारायणा नारायण साईं नारायण
नारायण साईं नारायण
वृंदावन में राधेश्याम
वृंदावन में राधेश्याम
अवधपुरी में जय सियारा विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर
विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर
परतीपुरी में साई राम
परतीपुरी में साई राम
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नर हरि
राम कृष्ण शिव
नारायण साईं नारायण
नारायण साईं नारायण
नारायण साईं नारायण
नारायण साईं नारायण
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम अवधपुरी में जय सियाराम श्यामला रूपा गोपाल
नील मेघ श्यामला रूपा गोपाल
नित्यानंद स्वरूप साई गोपाल
नित्यानंद स्वरूप साई गोपाल
ईश्वरांबनंदना साई गोपाल
ईश्वरांबनंदना साई गोपाल
नित्यानंद स्वरूप साई गोपाल
नित्यानंद स्वरूप साई गोपाल
नित्यानंद स्वरूप साई गोपाल नील में
మేఘ శ్యామల రూపా గోపాల నిత్యానంద స్వరూపా సాయి గో